This episode of the Sales Leadership Podcast is brought to you by Sales Leadership United. Since 2019, Sales Leadership United has grown to become the largest collection of sales leadership assets in the world. Check out salesleadershipunited.com and tap into tools used by elite sales leaders worldwide. Accelerate your leadership development. Solve modern sales challenges. Use fully prepped sales meetings in your next team meeting. Thousands of hours of sales leadership materials indexed and searchable with a single click. Create your own personal sales leadership library. Head to salesleadershipunited.com and use the code Rob at signup to get a free trial on me. Hi, I'm Rob Jepson, and my mission is to help sales leaders everywhere create record-setting growth from the companies they lead. I'm here to share the secrets of the world's most successful sales leaders. I don't care how big the company or how big the team, we showcase sales leaders who are taking what the market gives and then some. This show features leaders of teams who are beating their markets, winning at crazy rates, and creating life-changing years for the people they lead. The Sales Leadership Podcast is brought to you by Sales Leadership United, the world's largest collection of sales leadership assets. Be sure to check out the all-new salesleadershipunited.com. Fast-track your sales leadership development, gain insights into how other sales leaders are solving challenges similar to the ones you face, and tap into over 400 leadership topics, hundreds of video insights, battle-tested leadership frameworks, and new material that comes out every single week. Sales Leadership United is the easiest investment in yourself you'll ever make. Head to salesleadershipunited.com, use the code Rob at signup, and get a free trial on me. Now, get ready for some serious insights from sales leaders who are making it happen. And remember, don't worry, we got you. Hello, and welcome to the Sales Leadership Podcast, where high-growth sales leaders share high-growth practices and tactics. I am so glad to keep hearing from so many of you on how helpful these last few guests have been. I love your comments. I'm grateful for your support of the show. And thank you for all of these DMs that you keep sharing with me on how the show has been helpful. Please keep them coming. Please share the show with those you know. And get ready for today, because we got another really good one for you. Now, you guys that listen to the show all the time know I always get excited to welcome our new guest. But this one today, this one's particularly important to me. I'm welcoming one of the very best leaders I know to the show. And that's saying a lot, because I know a lot of leaders. But this guy, this is a person who I've worked closely with for many years. We worked together at the same place for a few years, and I've been able to be part of the development of his leaders over the last few years. And this person, he's someone who knows how to build something special. And that's why I'm so excited to have him here, because all of us are asked to build something special at our organizations. This is not someone who's trying to do that. This is someone who's done that. This is someone that every single one of us can learn something from. And I'm talking about my good friend, Andy Badia. Andy is the director of commercial banking for Washington Trust Bank. Washington Trust Bank is the largest and one of the most respected privately held banks in North America. And Andy leads the team responsible for more revenue than the rest of the organization combined. Andy leads a large team of bankers in the Pacific Northwest who provide crucial services to businesses of all sizes and all industries. Now, for those of you who aren't familiar with commercial banking, Andy leads other leaders of the Washington Trust team, and they face stiff competition. They are highly regulated, and they face consistent change from all kinds of market forces. But what's cool is he does it with incredible amounts of success. The team at Washington Trust has had head-turning growth year after year, regardless of the external circumstances, and his approach to leadership is a huge reason why. Andy's joining us today to talk about something that every single leader needs to be intentional about if they want to have intentional success. So if you can't tell, I'm fired up for this one. It's going to be fun. Time is going to fly by, so get your popcorn ready. Buckle up, and let's get started. Andy, welcome to the Sales Leadership Podcast, and thank you for finally joining me on an episode.
Wow. Well, thank you, Rob. I hope I can live up to that intro. I'm humbled to be part of your show. I mean, I listen to it, and you have some incredible people, and you provide incredibly valuable insight and coaching for people. So if I'm able to, you know, pass some things on that others are able to leverage into their own business, that That's a big win. So thank you.
Listen, the financial services sector is a crucial sector for any economy in the world. And you are leading one that's really doing it in a way like you've shared a lot of things with me. We could just talk about the greatness of your organization and the kinds of people that are watching what's happening at Washington Trust. Like you guys are doing things the right way. And it's going to be fun because you've done so many good things. So Andy, this is awesome. Well, you got 50,000 people listening to you today, man. No pressure, right?
And great.
You got 50,000 people listening to you today. And I want to start by having you introduce Washington Trust and the kind of bank you guys are. You guys have an incredible organization, and I'd love for you to just take a minute and introduce yourself to a whole bunch of leaders around the world.
Oh yeah. I love talking about Washington Trust. So, the bank was actually started in 1902 and, the Stanton family, Pete Stanton is now our chairman of the board. He's a fourth generation. We're headquarters are in Spokane, Washington. Our footprint goes from southern Idaho to the tip of Idaho up to Sandpoint, across through Washington, over to Seattle, down to Portland, and then back east into central Oregon. So we have a nice footprint. We're continuing to grow. During that time frame, I think we're what, maybe $11 billion now. But during that time frame, I think we've purchased two banks in 122 years. And the last bank was just one small bank in Oregon, so we could have a charter. I think that, Pete's always had a belief that hire good people and then they'll attract good clients. And, you know, I think being privately held provides us a lot of runway because we're able to look further than next quarter or even next year. And our runway is 3 to 5 years out in terms of how we try to plan our business and how we build it out. And that's a direct correlation to being privately held and having the patience to do that. And I think with Pete, you know, he looks at it and doesn't want to necessarily be aggressive about buying a bunch of banks because it's very difficult to integrate those into our culture, because I think we have a very unique culture, particularly in this industry.
I'm glad you went to culture, because that's what we're going to be talking about today. But before we do, again, I love that intro. Like, this is really fun for me to have you on the show, man. Another just short high level, like what you did, let's have a short intro. Like, why'd you decide to get into banking? And you've had an amazing run. You run a huge part of a very important bank. Like, 60 seconds on why you got into banking and how it led you to running such an important part of such an important organization.
Well, I never intended to be a banker, but
let's go.
I always wanted to be a hedge fund trader on the commodity side. And I worked a couple summers for a brokerage, and they told me right before my senior year of college, hey, do you like this business? I said, yeah. Do you want to get into it? I'm like, absolutely. And they said, great. I'm not going to hire you when you graduate. And I was like, oh man, I know I'm not great with the alphabet and filing, but did I do that bad of a job? And Mark Buckaloo, he was my manager at the time. He said, no. He goes, the thing is, Andy, you don't know anybody. You don't have any circles of influence. Nobody's going to give you a whole lot of money when you're 22-year-old. He goes, you need to go out and build your circle of influence, learn about the community and get integrated, and then I'll hire you. So I got into it because he said that banking was a great place to do all that. And after I got into it, I really came to love it. And Mark even approached me when I think I was 29, and he approached me and said, hey, are you ready to come back? And I was like, nope, I think this is where I'm supposed to be, Mark. I love what I do. I don't have the guts to do what our clients do. I mean, because when their chips are in every day, all of their chips are in, and I don't have the guts to do what they do. So I love living vicariously through them and feeling like I get to feel like I have some small piece of that. And I like to say, as a banker, we're in the dream fulfillment business, because our clients have these dreams and these goals, and we get to play a small factor in helping them get there. And when they do, it's incredible. So I love that.
It's well said, and you're right. The fulfillment you get when you're helping other organizations, it's a fun place to be. You're right. Banking is something that, unless you've been in it, it's hard to understand it. So thank you for that. And how big is your organization? You have a lot of bankers that are part of what you're doing now, right? Like, just as one last piece of context, I think you have 8 groups that you lead. Is that right?
Yeah, we have 6 regions. There's 1,200 employees.
Wow, big.
About 11 billion in assets. And then we also have a trust department that is about the same size as well.
So I just like, I'm sorry if I'm going slow, but for our leaders, I just want them to get a sense. We haven't had a lot of bank executives on the show. And I want them to get a sense of, like, this is not a small operation. There's a lot of stuff going on here. So let's have some fun. You talked about when you graduated, you'd been a college quarterback. That's one of the things that you and me have talked to, is how we've had college athletic careers. And you were a quarterback of a team in college. And now you're quarterbacking a bunch of commercial bankers. That this is called the Sales Leadership Podcast. And you don't just have a sales team. You have people that have to be multifaceted with you. And one of those things is also sell. And so for the people that are listening, these 50,000 listeners that might scratch their head and say, you're the head of commercial banking, where's the head of sales? Why might people be wrong if they feel like commercial banking isn't a sales job? Why would those people be wrong if they don't understand that?
Well, you know, nothing happens in any organization until a sale is made. And a sale for us is, you know, you have to earn somebody's business, to earn their trust, to have them bring their deposits to you or to trust you with a loan request. And then from a competitive landscape, I mean, it is incredibly competitive. From, you know, you have the fintechs to the online, you know, lenders, to your traditional commercial banks, to credit unions, everybody is after the same clients. And, you know, it might be an eighth of a point that is the difference maker in whether you get a deal or not. So it is incredibly sales oriented, and how you try to differentiate yourself and what your delivery is. And when you're able to do that and then really have them experience what your service is, what your culture is, how you are a partner for them, that then the value for them is more easily identified and makes selling so much easier.
We could have a whole episode just on how you differentiate in a highly commoditized environment, because there are a lot of people that say money's money. And I could tell you, our listeners, you have done a really good job teaching people in your organization how to differentiate, but that's not what we're going to talk about today, brother. I love how you said why this is a sales job, and people should start thinking about it that way. That's why this is going to be good. You have learned how to win when people make decisions on the slimmest of margins, and that can create tough environments sometimes. That can make it so people like that are in the team say, man, what else can I do? I can't just give stuff away. Like, you're famous for something that if you're just going to give stuff away, what do I need you for? That's one of my, I love that line. Some people might think that's harsh, but I think all these sales leaders that are listening, they will relate to you that way, Andy. If people are just going to try and give stuff away, what do I need you for? Right. And I might be saying that too harsh, because you're like one of the nicest guys ever, but I've heard you say that, and I love that. So
no, it is hard. I think that one of the hardest things for anybody in sales is always to appreciate what is your value.
Yeah.
And we're always afraid of, I think in this business, we're all driven by the win. And if you look at it and you don't really value yourself and what you bring to the table enough, you end up just kind of going down to the, you know, lowest common denominator, and
a race to the bottom. It becomes that race to the bottom, right?
And then you're no different, and you've already devalued yourself.
Well, like I said, we could talk about this and it would be money, but even this is part of what we want to talk about. You've created this culture I'm going to put cards on the table. I've been fortunate enough to work with you in a couple of different environments, like as a partner of yours, as a coach of members of your team. And so I know you well. I don't want it to be like, I want it to be clear. Like, we have this personal relationship, and it's one of the reasons why I'm so excited you're on the show. I've had a chance to have a front row seat, brother. I've had front row seat to watch you do a lot of what you do. And I've seen how you create an impact with the people you lead. And so everybody who's listening, they have their own versions of a highly competitive world. They have their own versions of competitors who will do stupid things and try and buy business instead of earn business. And what I've noticed with you, Andy, and I've told you this, so this won't surprise you, but I hope that our listeners find this interesting. I think you're one of the best I've ever seen at creating an environment where people don't just survive, they thrive. And I've seen people that work for you thrive in all kinds of economies, like through COVID and the ways you guys like use that to be like a really great experience. And economies are good. Economies are tough. Interest rates have played games with you guys. And I've watched you win no matter what happens. So here's where I want to go. How intentional do you have to be as a leader about the culture or the environment that you create that allows you to find ways to adapt and win no matter what's going on? Is that something that you are, do you spend time being intentional about?
Oh, absolutely. You have to be intentional about what your culture is. You have to dedicate time to it. Culture is not something that you can just kind of, oh, let's revisit it now and have, you know, something around that. I think culture and building an environment that you want is something that you have to do every day. You have to really walk it. You know, you can't just talk it. You have to walk it, and your people have to see it in you. I think that, you know, when you think about culture, I mean, you're going to have there's kind of a few cultures in my mind. You have your culture of your organization, and then there's kind of even cultures within the culture, because you have different leaders are going to have, you know, their own different characteristics, but it needs to align with the culture of your corporation or your, you know, your business, whatever you have. And that, I think, is, to me, you know, I've thought about it a little bit, and I think two things come to mind. You know, why maybe have I had success with it is probably because as I approach it, I think there's two things. Is you need to always be genuine and sincere about what it is, and you have to believe it.
Okay, I'm going to want to dive into both of those with a little bit of depth, because this is awesome. I love it when we start getting frameworks. I want to ask you a question if I can. Mm-hmm. I have a belief that every single leader is 100% responsible for the culture of their team. Now, the reason I bring this up is you'd said, yep, like, your culture has to align with the bigger one at the bank. And I like that. So we're in the alignment business. And so is it fair for me to say that if you are a leader, you are not a victim of a culture. You are not an inheritor of a culture. You are 100% in charge of whatever culture your team has. Is that, absolutely, agree? Talk to me about why you say absolutely.
Well, you have the large culture of whatever your organization is, but the culture that you are leading within it, you establish it, because the people that you lead feed off of you, and you are going to direct what is that culture? What is that feel of the team? What is that belief? Because they look at you to be that rudder that is going to help steer the ship. And
wow, what a great visual.
You can fake.
The culture is the rudder that steers the ship. That's a big deal, man. That's a really visual way of looking at it. It's not, you're just like getting along and bouncing along. You're saying, no, the culture is what steers the ship. And that's why, if I take what I said earlier, you can navigate storms and you can navigate good times, but you got to steer the ship. And in your mind, it's the culture that allows you to steer.
Oh, absolutely. And in my world, I get most excited about our culture and in terms of capitalizing on the opportunity when the waters are the roughest, because that's when I honestly feel like we are going to be at our best and have the, you know, our teams come closer together. We're more laser focused on what we have to achieve, and we're on the attack. You know, it's so easy to get very defensive and just start to worry about your house and everyone else. And, you know, your competitive landscape starts to, you know, be real inward thinking. And to me, that's when you can really make hay.
I love this, man. No wonder that's one of the reasons you have a good culture. So when the storm's coming, you're like back to your football days. That's when you're strapping your chin strap on. You're just like, this is it. This is what we signed up for. This is when we take the lead right here. This is when we put people in our dust because we can handle this in ways that other people either can't or won't. Am I hearing you right on that?
Absolutely. Yeah.
And for people that will see your videos on Sales Leadership United, I hope that they watch just to see your facial reaction. You're like, well, yeah, that's who we are. Of course, that's what's going to happen. You're like, give me the hard question, Rob, because that's who we are. I love that. So let me ask you this. If culture, and we're going to get back to your two things, genuine and sincere, and then belief. I want to spend time in those. But I really want to get your take on this because I've worked with you with leaders, and we've talked about leaders, and you have all kinds of different strengths and weaknesses that every leader has. No leader's perfect. Every leader has different things that are strengths and weaknesses. How often do you see a team like resemble or take on what they see from their leaders? I've told you, I call it the law of the mirror. Like, if you like what you see, look in the mirror. If you don't like what you see, also look in the mirror. Like, do you buy into that? Like, how often do you see teams take on that persona of the leader? And I really wish people, I hope they go to Sales Leadership Night just to watch you say, yeah, I mean, hard times, bring it on. That's why your team responds. I'm confident, Andy, it's because of the way you responded. So is there truth to that, that teams take on what, you know, the persona of their leaders?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it doesn't take long to walk into an office and be there for a while to be able to generate an opinion of, okay, what is kind of the culture of the team? And, you know, does it align with, you know, the leader? Because, you know, I have multiple leaders that I work with, and getting to be around their people and see how they interact. The strong leaders, their teams generally behave very similar to the leader because they've been exposed enough and have that same attitude and approach to whatever the challenge or the opportunity is or whatever is in front of them.
Hey, so you just said something that I want to dive into. This is one of the reasons people love our show, is because I had no idea we were going to go here. And I'm really excited about this one. You just said, and I wrote it down. That's why when people see the video, they always see the guest looking good. They always see the top of my head because I'm taking notes. I'm already on page 2 of my notes.
Well, at least you still have hair.
Hey, man, the reason I'm growing my hair out is after I overcame cancer, I was like, I am going to be very grateful for that I didn't lose my hair. I'm going to grow it as long as I can until I have a Samson moment and somebody cuts it off.
Well, I'll be the one to cut it for you.
All right, let's go back to, you said strong teams have consistency. You didn't say weak teams are inconsistent, but I want to ask you that. Is that when you said they have this consistency because they take it on from the leader, are leaders who don't have that consistency, is that one of the reasons why you see weakness comes from inconsistency and strength comes from consistency? Is there a relationship there?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And I think that, you know, when you have weak leaders, it tends to also foster, you know, you don't have as much trust within your team. And trust, if you don't have trust as a foundation with the team, they have they have to know that, you know, you're genuine, you're sincere, they can trust you, but they have to be able to trust each other as well. And, you know, lots of times, I guess I would say that when I think about leaders that may not in my career that haven't been as strong as others, it usually came down to trust.
Love it. Let's go back to where you were. I want to go back, because I don't want to blow by this. I can see us finishing with trust in the leader, trust in each other. I could see us having some good conversation there, but I don't want to blow by the two things that you put up on the table. We teed it up nice and high. Now I want to spend some time on this one. You said there's two things. One, you said it needs to be genuine and sincere culture. And then you said the other one, they need to have belief. You want to talk about those for a minute and give me a little more color and depth on this? Because I got a lot of people that are listening. I hope they're taking good notes. Let's talk about what you mean when you say genuine and sincere. About what?
Well, I think, you know, if I think about myself and building a team, trust is the foundation of it. But as you approach building a team, being genuine, sincere in how you're approaching your people with that is critical. You can't fake it. You know, you don't, you know, I think people know, you know, if I take 5 minutes to stop and visit with somebody, I'm going to be intentional about it. And I want to learn something about them. I want them to know that I'm here to learn something about you or to hear about you or what's happening, and that I'm sincere in that interest. Because they need to know I care, because I do care, but if you're not making an effort to kind of show that you care in ways beyond the, you know, oh, you know, here's a birthday card, or those things are, that isn't what's going to build it. It's going to be that, you know, 2 minute conversation that you had with them, that you learned something about them, and maybe you followed up and they'll go, huh, he was really listening. He genuinely cares about what I'm going through or what I'm, you know, dealing with.
So I think that it's really interesting that you picked people first when we started talking about culture. It wasn't about transparency. It wasn't about success. There's a lot of things you could have picked first. You said genuine, sincere, and I said about what, and it was this fast, people. It was people. Yeah. In sales, it is easy for people, like, so I'm going to tell you, I had a leader, you don't know this person, but it's in a company that you know for sure, and she's an incredible leader. She's an amazing leader. She's won their president's club trip before, and someone that is in one of their top market areas and has done amazingly well. And she called me out of the blue last week and said, hey, can I have some one-on-one time with you? Even though I'm not like doing a like one-on-one with her like I used to, she was like, I need to talk to you. And she said, Rob, I just don't feel valued right now. And it was interesting to me, because that is not the person that I would ever feel would say that, because the success has come. So success isn't what makes you feel valued. It's what you said. So you're shaking your head for people that will hopefully will come online and see the video. Like, talk to me why you're so like you're pretty vigorous about it. You're like, yeah, you're right. It's not success that makes you feel valued. It's something else that makes you feel valued. Can you go into that a little bit more?
I mean, you can win all day and, you know, kind of be the lone wolf kind of thing and do all these great things, but, you know, that can only last for so long. I think the real fuel for the engine that enriches you is when you're doing it part of a team and those around you that are celebrating it with you, recognizing it, and probably also just as strong as even with the challenges, because we don't always win. And it's when you have folks that are coming and saying, you know, hey, I've walked in these shoes before, you know, being a strong leader comes in saying, I've been there. If I can help you, or even just being there to listen. Sometimes you're it may be somebody who's really senior. They know how to work through it, but sometimes they just need to have somebody to listen to. And making the time to be with your people to hear them, and then to give them some insight is of value.
That is a great nugget. One of the things that makes a great culture is people feeling sincerely valued, not for their production, but for who they are as a person. Right. Now, obviously, we have to produce. We have to contribute. We have goals we mm-hmm. have to hit. I'm not saying, again, that's why I love the fact that you were a college quarterback. Like, you needed to bring the whole team in to do the job. And at the end of the day, we had to put points on the board. We got to score points to win. And so I get that.
It is a production-oriented business.
Yeah. All of us. We are not a nonprofit. We're not a not-for-profit. Like, we need to make money. It's easy for people, especially in sales, to think they are only as good as their last month or their last quarter or their last deal. I think about this. I had a friend, a different client of mine, that said I should start watching that Netflix Formula One race show. It's been really interesting to me. There's so many leadership things associated with it. And these racers often say that it's a bummer for them because they're only as good as their last race. You know, McLaren will cut me loose or Ferrari will cut me loose if I don't get on the podium. And I think there's a lot of parallels to that. So any thoughts around, like, tips you might give 50,000 listeners on, here's the things because you've come through this. You've grown a lot. I'm sure this is not a happy accident. You're not just naturally doing this. Any thoughts around how do you keep yourself from falling into you're only as good as your last month? Is there any thoughts around that without devaluing last month? Because the last month matters, and so does the next month. But
right. So I'm going to tell a little story.
Let's go.
So this was my second year of college, and our coach was Keith Goberson. Keith went on, he coached Cal, he was at the Seahawks, and he was an incredible coach. And back in my day, we had 8mm film. And on Sundays, we'd all gather, we'd come to the UCC, and we'd be in this big classroom. And at the beginning, both offense, defense is all in one room. And Coach Gilbertson, he handled the special teams review of the film. And then after special teams, offense, defense would go to their different rooms, and they'd go through their own individual reviews. And Gilby, you always worried about what was going to happen on Sunday because you never wanted to get the circle put on you. He'd get his fingers and he'd get in front of that 8mm and he'd circle somebody and he would be like, I want you guys to watch this slappy. What in the hell is he doing? What? And inevitably you did not want to be in the circle because you were highlighted in front of your peers that you screwed something up. Sometimes the circle was a good thing. Usually it was a bad thing.
It was not the circle of trust is what you're telling me. It was not the circle.
No, not the circle of trust. But he put the circle on you, and in front of your peers, you know, it would be pointed out what you didn't do right. But he always would follow it back up with something, whether it was something lighthearted or he always followed it up, and you always felt loved. Even after you just got, you know, kind of, you know, dressed down in front of your peers for, you know, it didn't go well on this one, he would always follow it back up. And I use the word loved because that's how he would make you feel. And then you didn't feel so bad about it. You knew, yeah, it didn't go well on that play, but he gave you this support that then, you know, it wasn't like you were tore down. And I think that in our world, when it's not going well, you know, it's not going well.
Yeah. And usually okay, you don't have to tell someone if they're losing or sucking or whatever. Right. Yeah.
Right. But you can come in and you don't have to dwell on it. You can acknowledge it, But then you can talk about how do we change that? And let them know, you know what? I've been there too, because all of us have. No one has just been a rocket ship and only gone straight up.
I for sure have not. Yeah, I get that. Can you believe we're down to our last 10 minutes-ish? Can you believe how fast that's gone? We're down to 10 minutes,
man. Oh, my word.
Yeah, I told you it would go fast. So I want to ask you something along these lines again. And I'm sorry, because I want to make sure we finish with belief. I love this genuine people first thing. I love this. But in the spirit of people first, I want to ask you the same thing. I love your, I call that hammer and heel. Make them feel loved. Hammer and then heel. I really like that. It's a framework that I think is good. I want to think about this concept. If it is people first, but we still are in the production business, we still have goals. Like you guys have had, you guys don't have layup drills. You guys have big goals. You have, you're not just in the lifestyle business. You guys are growing on purpose and you're not looking to like tiptoe through the tulips. You are doing big stuff and that's why you're turning so many heads. So I want to ask you the question about balancing two things that we have to balance as leaders. So think about this teeter-totter. And, you know, I don't want, you know, we get on the teeter-totter, we go down and we jump off and then the other side bangs down and you bust a tailbone, right? We have two sides of the leadership teeter-totter as it goes to culture. One is the need to be encouraging and supportive, but the other is to be challenging and find ways to grow and become. Any thoughts around balancing those things? Is that, first of all, do you like that metaphor or like, how would you approach that?
No, I think one of the things on that, in terms of that metaphor is sometimes to not just be focused about what the challenge is, but also trying to turn it and say, what is the opportunity within the challenge? So that, you know, people can see that there is hope.
Ooh, and, I love that.
And that, you know, when it's really tough, that's when, you know, a lot of people will wilt. But if you have a strong team and you built that team around trust, there's that, you know, camaraderie with each other. And if, as a leader, you're able to provide the vision of how we're going to do this. Now they look at it and say, okay, we can do this. And they don't, you know, it's not me by myself. Yes, you have a individual role in it, but you know, the teams tend to help each other probably as much or sometimes more than just what the leader does, because you know, the leader is great at coming in. They can provide, you know, thoughts, vision, where the opportunities are, but the teams are grinding it out with each other every day. And that team might be, you know, more of an entry-level person that's helping to provide the support and sometimes even just encouragement that you can do it.
Well, Andy, you just said a word that I wrote down and circled, and I think it's a super important word. And I understand you better, even though I've known you for years, I understand you better because of the word. Okay. You said that in challenges, we have to find opportunities. And I love that. And you said, because if we can find the opportunities, it creates hope. Hope is the word that gets it. So now I see why you have this confidence of, I actually like the hard times, because other people won't have hope. In the hard times, you're going to find the opportunities that create what? Creates hope.
The hope.
And we've all heard the phrase, hope is not a strategy. We've all heard that. And challenging times makes people say, man, I just pack up my bag and go home till it goes. No, if you can find hope in those challenging times, that's what makes people double down and narrow their focus and aim a little smaller. When I don't mean like lower their standards, I mean smaller focus point. And you're not just like taking whatever you can get. Like, we have laser focus. That's what I mean when I say aim smaller. We aim laser focused, and then you go out and execute that way, and all of a sudden the hope becomes a reality. And I got to think that fuels belief. The fact that you've created hope that they panned out in the past means that you're someone that when the challenge comes, they don't like get scared. They just turn to you and say, where are we going now, coach? Is that
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. Because, and then after you've done it a few times, now your team knows this is the drill. This is how we do it. And that now you're building a different type of culture. I would much prefer a lot of times to have a tough environment than an easy one.
Wow. Tell me why you say that.
Strictly because, you know, most times when it's tough, just like what you said earlier, people don't see the hope. They don't see where the opportunity is. They just look inward. And one of the great things about my job is I get to see so many businesses and what makes them successful. And where they really make their money is when times are tough, because the good ones, they seek out where is that opportunity. And that's one of the things I've learned from them to be able to integrate into our business. Because when it's good, it's a lot harder to differentiate. It usually becomes more expensive as well.
Wow. Andy, man, we're going to have you back for a round two. This is really, really good. That concept of hope, is hope like a critical component of any positive culture?
Yeah, I mean, you have to have, you know.
Let me interrupt you. I wouldn't have had that been on my short list, and I feel stupid right now. Like, I think that should have been the first thing on my list.
Well, I don't want to misunderstand. Hope is not what's going to get you there, but you have to have hope and a belief that you can do it. Now you got to put the structure and then you got to execute to it. But, you know, without the hope and the belief that you can do it, man, you're toast.
All right. So we have legit 5 minutes left in this episode. So I want to first make sure you have enough time to do one thing, and then we're going to let you put some bows on it. And I hope 6 months, 8 months from now, we'll come back for a round two. Like, we have only scratched the surface, baby. How do people connect to you? How do they learn more from you? Do they find you on LinkedIn? Like, you're going to have people that are probably going to want to ask you some questions. And like, you are an expert in creating an elite environment, and people are starting to see why. How do they learn about you or Washington Trust or any of those things?
Well, I am on LinkedIn. You can look me up on LinkedIn. You can, if you want, email me directly. I'd be happy to do that. It's A Beitia. Super easy to, it's just like it sounds. Beitia. A Beitia at wahtrust.com. Shoot me an email. You can always, if you're having a hard time getting a hold of me, get a hold of Rob. He knows how to get a hold of me. But anything I can do to help, I'd be happy to, you know, share thoughts. Or there's probably things I'll be able to learn from some of your folks too.
Well, we'll put those links in the show notes to make it really easy for people to reach out. And I hope that you have a few that do, because Andy will take you up on it. And Andy is an amazing resource. So that's good. I'm glad that we got that down. We have like 3 minutes. If you were going to put in a bow, like have like a couple of final thoughts to 50,000 people that are thinking about culture, like when I teach culture and we're doing a group series with your people and culture is one of those C's that we're coming up on in a hurry. We'll be there in a minute. There's a famous phrase from Justice Potter Stewart when he was in the Supreme Court, and he was asked to legislate the definition of porn, of all things. And he said, and they were like, when the Supreme Court came back, he said, I can't tell you what it is, but I know it when I see it. I see weaker leaders apply that same thing to culture. I can't tell you what it is, but I know it when I see it. You've dropped a few nuggets. You've talked about trust. You've talked about sincerity, authenticity. You've talked about hope. You've talked about belief, but not much yet because I haven't let you. Would you, like, what were some words that you would say, listen, if you want to have a culture that can help you navigate any storm, that makes it so you actually look forward to when the chips are down because you can do shit that other people around you can't do. It is easy to gravy train, dude. You're a quarterback. It's easy to win when you're out in front. It is way harder to come back when you're behind or do other things. Are there a few words, and maybe you can finish with why you kept mentioning belief? How does a leader create belief?
So when I think about, you know, building teams and culture, I think the one thing that I always kind of come back to is you have to be true to you, in that you are going to establish the culture. If you're the leader, you're going to establish the culture. So that is a reflection of you. So don't try to make a culture that is not you, because it will not work. It needs to be you. And then you have to be intentional about how you're going to try to build that culture. And you have to be consistent with it. And you have to nurture it. It's like soil, you know. You have to fertilize it and get the soil ready to, so that seed can germinate and grow and give it water. It's something that you can never take for advantage of. And that is part of that culture. You know, you have to, it's the culture, although you are setting it, the culture is about your team. And it's what you want for the team, not for you. If this is about you, I don't know if I'm not familiar with what that culture would be. I don't know if it's one I'd want to be a part of. But the culture is about the team. You set what the culture is going to be, but ultimately the culture is about your team and your people.
That's a good way to finish. Sorry, I'm writing these things down. I love this. Andy, you got me fired up, man. You always have that impact on me. And I hope that our 50,000 listeners got a sense of why you're the kind of leader that people raise their hand and say, hell yeah, I'm in. Okay, there's a lot more that would go to it on how do we actually bring these attributes to life that we didn't have time to get into. And maybe that's what we can do next time. I want to thank you on behalf of 50,000 people for giving us 45 minutes of your day. His name is Andy Badia. My advice is use the links in the show notes and reach out to him, connect to him, talk to the guy. He's the person who understands as well as anybody I've ever met that culture and environment is the rudder that lets you steer your ship. And he knows what he's talking about because he has successfully steered that ship through more than one hurricane and landed in whatever port of call he decided would be the fun one or the right one to get to. He's never ended up wherever the wind just blew it. He has driven that ship, and everybody that wanted to be on that Washington Trust boat thanks him for it. I've seen it firsthand. It's not something he told me about. It's something I've witnessed. And if you apply some of the blueprint that Andy gave you today, you can see some of that same ability to steer to whatever port of call your business needs you to get to as well. So Andy, on behalf of 50,000 people worldwide, thank you for joining the show. I wish you amazing success into the future. Thank you for your awesomeness. Thank you for your friendship. And I can't wait to make this happen again, this time in less than 5 years. Okay.
Thank you, Rob. And I can't thank you enough for all the things that you've helped me with and done for me and my people. And your listeners are lucky to have you as a resource.
Hey, everyone. Welcome to another So What portion of the Sales Leadership Podcast, where we break down that interview and we ask ourselves, why did that conversation even matter? But first, this episode's brought to you by Sales Leadership United. Sales Leadership United has had so much growth, and I am grateful to each of you who have chosen to check it out. The purpose of Sales Leadership United is simple. I want to give you access to the largest collection of sales leadership assets in the world. Listen, I coach over 100 sales leaders at any given time. They're in big companies. They're in small companies. They're in new companies. They're in really mature companies. They're in every single industry that matters. I'm talking about people that are new to leadership and some people that are super seasoned and maybe the most successful in their space. And this is worldwide, and every single one of them is asking me the same thing. They want more tools. They want more insights. They want more perspective. They ask me questions like, how do you create systems? How do you create foundations? How do you create change? Man, how do you coach? How do you lead up, manage up, or connect to a totally different generation? And the number one question I get, what are other leaders like me doing to solve problems like the one I'm facing right now? And that's why you need to check out Sales Leadership United. All the tools, all the training, all the techniques. perspective that comes only from the benefit of thousands of hours with other leaders from all around the world. So if you haven't checked out Sales Leadership United, head over to salesleadershipunited.com and use the code ROB at checkout, that's R-O-B, get a free trial on me. Let me know how it goes. Now listen, I don't often have the chance to have dear friends join me on the show. But as I work with leaders in a new year that has brand new challenges, I've seen the need to be intentional with your environment and culture be more important than ever before. And I'm fortunate enough to see many, many leaders and how each of them are approaching the challenge of building an environment where the motivated thrive, not just survive. Leaders are 100% responsible for the culture or environment that their team works in. And it may very possibly be the most important thing to get right. But unfortunately, too many people don't have a great blueprint on how to build an environment that fosters growth. But my guy, Andy, he is dead on. Culture is the rudder that steers the ship for your team. And that's why the famous line from the from Justice Potter Stewart from the U.S. Supreme Court is not good enough for anyone who wants to be an elite leader. He was asked to legislate a standard, and here's what Justice Stewart said. I can't tell you what it is, but I know it when I see it. Now, I don't know if you know, I always have fun when I ask people, do you know what he was talking about when he said, I can't tell you what it is, but I know it when I see it. And this was the response that he gave when he was asked to legislate what constituted pornography. Yes, it was a porn question. And so if that answer was only okay in the response to what constitutes porn or adult material, that answer, I can't tell you what it is, but I know it when I see it, that's even less effective in defining a winning environment for your sales team. Listen, too many leaders, when asked what the elements of an elite culture are, they default to the porn standard. They say, wow, I don't know exactly what an elite culture is. I just know it when I see it. And I'm here to tell you that is not good enough. Because again, just like Andy said, your culture is the rudder that steers your ship. And if you don't have that thing figured out and intentional, you're going to have a hard time driving your ship to the ports of call that you need to land in. And that means it's so important, you cannot afford to get it wrong. So while I hope you all go back and listen to Andy and you take some notes, and you'll be better off if you do, and while I hope you turn to Sales Leadership United to get the video segments from this episode's highlights, because I think they'll be helpful, here are a couple of thoughts for you to consider as you build your culture's blueprint. Number one, culture is about behaviors. Yeah, that's what it is. It's not about other things. It's about behaviors. This is a good one to write down. What you permit is what you promote. Being an elite leader and having an elite culture, it's not about you being the architect. It is about you being the influencer. You have to create a place where behaviors you need and want to see are natural byproducts of the experiences you choose to create. So you need to be an influencer, not the kind on social media that are kind of really proud of doing nothing except for getting someone to click on a like or a share. You know, look at my abs and look at my arms and look at my ass. I want you to be an influencer that gets people to willingly, voluntarily change behaviors. That's the kind of influencer we need to be. So know what behaviors you want to see. And then more important, know the experiences that you need to engineer that will create these behaviors as a natural byproduct. Number two, your environment needs to create professional safety. I'm talking about emotional safety, psychological safety, success safety. Your environment needs to have all they need to win. They just need to add the motivation and the effort. So I'm talking about the right people, the right tools, the right balance of encouragement and challenge. But make a safe place for this struggle to happen, because sales is a struggle. It always will be. It's not an easy job. And the people on your team need to feel like they have a place where they're surrounded by and supported by everything they need to have success. And that takes me to number three, be a gardener. Too many leaders to create an environment where only a narrow type of team member can succeed. You need to create an environment where a diverse, wide type of teammate can make it. It reminds me of when I moved into the townhome that I live in, and I'd gone from my big six-bedroom house with lots of windows to a smaller one with very little light. When I wanted to plant things, I tried to plant a robust wide variety of plants, and they were all dying because they just didn't get enough light. And so it resulted in me having a very narrow band of type of plant that I could have. And so I don't want you to do that. You need to be able to have a very diverse place. And so that means you got to have the right soil. You know, what are the conditions where you can plant any kind of salesperson, and so long as they're motivated, they can succeed? What goes into creating that soil? From a clarity perspective and a capacity perspective and a competency perspective, there's a number of things that will go into that. You're going to also need to have the ability to feed the people who are planted in that environment. I'm talking about the leadership version of water, sunlight, and fertilizer. You've got to be super intentional how you feed those team members after you've planted them in the right kind of soil. And finally, you're going to have to weed that garden when toxicity shows up. It reminds me, I love bamboo. I've talked about bamboo on the show before. Bamboo is the fastest growing plant in the world. And it takes 6 years after you planted it for it to sprout. But then once it sprouts, it'll grow sometimes 3 feet in a day. And it's massive. And so I like that metaphor. And I have a really cool bamboo arrangement in my bedroom with giant 6 feet long, 72-inch bamboo stalks. And it's very symbolic to me. And when the woman that sold it to me, she said, make sure you change the water every week. And I did that for a long time. And then one time I thought, man, this is such a pain. Let's see what happens if I skip a week. So I skipped a week and then nothing happened. So I went to every 2 weeks changing the water. And then I got lazier and I said, what if it's once a month? And after a little while, one of them started to yellow. So I reached out to the bamboo lady. She's from a different country. And I asked her what's up. And she said, are you changing the water every week? And I'm like, sometimes. And after she scolded me, she said, take that yellow one out as fast as you can, because it's going to release a toxin into the water that will kill the rest of them. And it may be too late. And turns out she was right. I had 10 of these 6 feet stalks, and they're not cheap. They're very expensive. And in a very short period of time, one stalk yellowed after they'd been perfect for so long. And with like just a few weeks, all of them were dead. Same thing will happen with your team. If you allow a toxic teammate to stay and be okay in your environment, it will have a negative impact on every single one. So be very careful and protect your environment. But most of all, I want to take you back to Andy's advice on being intentional and genuine. Those two attributes are going to go a long way in creating an environment where people on your team thrive. So don't ever leave your environment to accident, because every year we're going to face new challenges. Every year you're going to need to reevaluate if you're building the right environment that will provide a place where your team can succeed given the current conditions. And that's important, because as the conditions in your ocean that you're navigating change, you may need to change the rudder that steers your ship. And as leaders, we have to create the greatest year in company history every single year. And that means you're going to need to be watching your environment closely, because elite cultures, they are never a happy accident. So Andy, my man, thank you for joining me. Thank you for sharing your incredible insights. Congrats on the amazing success you've had at one of the greatest financial institutions in North America. I've watched you up close and personal, and you are as good an environment builder as I have ever seen in my career. And I know it's not some random act of luck. You've done it with intent. It's carried you through every single economic condition where you ended up thriving, not just surviving. And Justice Stewart has no impact on the way you lead. You absolutely know what it is. And you go out and make it happen on purpose. So to all of our listeners, be sure you connect with Andy. Hit him up on LinkedIn. Reach out to him. Make him part of your network. We've put some links in the show notes to make this easy to do. And be sure to head to Sales Leadership United for video clips of this conversation with Andy and hundreds of other sales leaders. The video around Andy's thoughts on culture and creating leadership impact are videos you'll find so helpful as you create your own intentional cultures. And finally, thanks to each of you, our listeners. The greatest compliment you can give is to share the show with those you work with. Introduce them to the Sales Leadership Podcast. Leave us a review on iTunes. And you can support the show by checking out Sales Leadership United. Head to Patreon and check it out. You'll be glad you did. Thank you for your support of the Sales Leadership Podcast. Our job as sales leaders is to create life-changing years for the people we lead. If you liked this message, please share it with someone who needs to hear it, and then get after it. Because life is short. You got no guarantee of what comes tomorrow. Maximize your today. Be elite. Live strong and chase your passions and do your best work so you can live your best life. And don't ever forget, you got this and I got you. Here's to a terrific week. Thank you so much for joining the Sales Leadership Podcast, the award-winning sales leadership podcast for those sales leaders looking to create legendary impact to those they lead. The greatest compliment you can give is to share this show and any of your favorite episodes with your fellow sales leaders, social media followers, or other communities you're part of. The Sales Leadership Podcast is brought to you by the Jepson Performance Group. If you want to discuss any of the topics discussed on the show, want to level up your leadership impact, discuss executive coaching services, or even include me at an upcoming event, hit me up at rob@jeppg.com. That's rob@jeppg.com. And to those of you working to become a legendary sales leader, I salute you and wish you much success on your journey. Whenever you need someone in your corner, you know where to find me.